You're listening to Bill Padley on Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. The World Was My Lobster tells the story of George Cole's more than 70 years in the acting profession that began with a walk-on part at the age of 14 in the stage musical The White Horse Inn in 1939, and of course continued having such roles as David Bliss in Radio's A Life of Bliss, Flash Harry in the St. Trinian's films, and indeed Arthur Daly in television's Mind. I am absolutely delighted and privileged that George Cole joins us now on the show. Thank you for joining us, George.
Pleasure.
Let's go back to those early years, because you had an interesting childhood. You were adopted but didn't really find out that till much later on.
I found out when I was 14.
Yes, and I believe that at that moment when you found out, you didn't really see any real need to find your original parents.
No, I didn't. I was very happy with my adoptive parents.
As we mentioned there, the age of 14 was quite a critical year for you, because that's when you first appeared in a stage musical. Then, how did that happen at such a tender age?
Well, it's a terrible story, really. I left school on a Friday, and when you left school in those days, you had to go and meet the man from the Ministry of Labour.
Right.
With your headmaster. And they asked you what you want to do, and he said, right, you go to this place and they'll give you a job.
Mm-hmm.
And when my turn came, I said, I want to go on the stage. And the headmaster said, get out and get to the end of the line.
Dear.
So I got out and got to the end of the line. When I finally got back at the front, the man from the Ministry of Labour said, go to this particular butcher in Morden on Monday morning. They want a messenger boy who can ride a bike.
Right, interesting. He'd really got it then, hadn't he? He'd really got your career path.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then that night I was selling papers around the streets of Morden. And when I finished, I used to go home with a copy of each. There were three evening papers, the Star, the Evening News, and the Standard. And looking through, absolutely incredible, I found a small advertisement that said, small boy wanted for London musical. Apply it, so-and-so, in the West End.
Incredible.
So the next morning, I set off, told my parents what I was going to do, and went to an audition for this job. And when I arrived, I thought I was in paradise. It was full of beautiful girls, all singing and dancing. And then they got to me and said, what can you do? And I had the most appalling Cockney accent, and I can hear myself saying, well, I do French, Romans, country, moon in your ears. By Will Shakespeare. So they said, yes, fine, all right, carry on. And I did, but I didn't get the part, but I got the understudy. And the understudy meant that I had to be in several of the choruses. And I also had to walk on stage with two goats and six white doves. And the other catch was, you've got to go to Blackpool today.
Okay.
So I had no time to go home and show my parents. So I sent them a telegram saying, have gone on stage, we'll write later. In those days it was, I think, 9 words for 6 months.
Oh, wonderful story.
And off I went. And I was there until... we were meant to go on tour all around the country. But then war broke out. And so they cancelled the main tour. And we went over to Ireland, and we played Dublin and Cork. And by that time, the war had settled down to a curious nothing happening. And we all came back and went off on a tour around Great Britain.
How amazing. Well, if something was meant to be, then that was meant to be that you ended up as an actor, wasn't it?
I think so. But there are times when people say, what wonderful parents you must have had to let you go off like that. And I thought, I don't know, why didn't they call the police or something?
Absolutely, what an extraordinary story. Well, you certainly didn't look back after that. You starred in over 40 films, including the wonderful St. Trinian's movies. They must have been a hoot to make.
Oh, they were heaven. Really lovely. And I have one funny story. I met someone, a comedian. Believe it or not, it was at a funeral. And I said to him, somebody told me that I pinched my Flash Harry character from you. And he said, it's nonsense. I never said anything of the sort. I said, well, if you did, you're wrong, because I pinched it from Sid Field.
In those days, your mentor was Alistair Sim, and he went on to be a great friend of yours.
Yeah.
A crucial man in your life.
Yes, absolutely.
And what was it about Alistair at the time that you thought, you know, I want this man to teach me everything he knows?
Well, it started in the Gaumont Cinema in Morden. I was watching a film called Alf's Button Afloat, which he was in with the Crazy Gang. And I was so fascinated that at the end of the film, I waited to see what his name was. And, of course, it was a very odd name at the time.
Hmm.
But it never occurred to me that a couple of years later I'd be working with him.
Incredible.
And the second story is even worse, because the boy I was understudying at the Coliseum, his wife was the woman that looked after all the young girls and us.
Yeah.
And she said her son was going for an audition for a play at the Strand Theatre. Would you like to come? And we have to keep out of the way because there might be some important people there. So I said, well, I'd love to. I went, and it was at the Strand Theatre, which nothing was on at the time. And I went in the door that led to the stage and stood at the back because there were things going on down by the footlights with about five or six boys about the same age as me.
Mm-hmm.
And a director. And after about a quarter of an hour, he started shouting at me. Come on, don't waste my time. And I said, no, I'm just waiting for my friend here. I'm not here. And he said, come on. And he thrust the script in my hand and said, read that. Well, I read it, and I got the part, which was terrible, really. And that was Cottage to Let.
Good Lord.
And that was the play in which I met Alistair, and we played in Wyndham's for about 9 months, and then the Blitz happened, and all the theatres closed down. And then we all got together again, the same cast, and we took it round the camps, army camps and things like that. And after we'd done that, all the theatres opened again. We came back in, did another 9 months at Wyndham's.
Amazing.
And from that, I got the film of Cottage to Let.
And yours and Alistair's path went on many, many times after that. And I think I'm right in saying one of the best bits of advice he ever gave you or taught you was to listen.
Yes. Yeah. He made the point that, you know, it's all very well knowing your lines and saying the right words, but do listen to what the other people are saying to you.
Yeah.
And it's very important, I think.
Well, funny enough, it's one of the adages if you're interviewing somebody that most people don't actually get. You should be paying attention to what somebody's saying.
Yeah.
It seems so obvious, but...
Yes, it is, but you do often see in various things on television where it's very clear that... people are not listening to each other.
Yes, absolutely. Moving on to your career, how could we not talk about the incredible epic movie Cleopatra, Taylor and Burton, which you were playing a deaf mute in?
Ah, now you've ruined my story. Because I had to have a full-size beard put on every morning at about 5 o'clock. And after about 3 months of this, I said to the makeup man, well, why do you, put this beard on? Why didn't you get me a made-up beard? And he said, because I know you actors, you like to feel your face move when you are speaking. And I said, well, that's very kind of you, but I'm playing a deaf mute.
And wasn't there a kind of an addendum to that story that he was off and you got a new guy who actually just brought a selection of beards and made it very simple?
Yeah, we had to do retakes. After the premiere had been announced in New York, we had to do retakes in Malaga.
Just down the road from here. Well, we're in Marbella. You're just miles down the road.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And I didn't realise you were in Spain.
Yes, and I didn't realise that parts of that film were done in Malaga. How extraordinary.
Yeah. And we were all set to do these retakes. And the makeup man arrived. And he was a makeup man from the old Walton-on-Thames studios.
Uh-huh.
And he had a Marks & Spencer plastic bag. And he said, oh, George, you'll need a beard, don't you? And I said, oh, yeah. And he rummaged through his carrier bag and pulled one out. He said, I think that's about right. Stuck it round my face. Yeah, that's it. Good, fine. So my makeup took 5 minutes.
Fantastic, fantastic. And I believe that actually Liz Taylor actually thought you were a deaf mute.
Yeah, I didn't realise that until I worked with her again on The Bluebird. And when she was introduced to me, she said, and I can't quote the actual words she used, but she said, I thought you were a deaf mute.
That's extraordinary.
But she was lovely to work with.
I can imagine. What an experience.
Yeah, wonderful.
What an experience. Obviously, we move on to Minder, which made you a household name, earned you 2 BAFTA nominations, actually made you even an unlikely pop star.
Didn't last for long, though. Only one record.
Oh, well, it's better than some have had, to be fair. Obviously, this was it's a huge role for you. It was originally, I believe, meant as a vehicle, obviously, for your co-star, and you really became the star of that show, actually.
Well, no, I don't think that's fair. We were very much a duo, and working with Dennis was really wonderful. A lovely person to work with.
And how much leeway were you given in creating the role of Arthur Daly?
I didn't need any leeway. It was all there on the page. It just came up and did you.
Incredible. And you, every day you went to work, must have thought to yourself, I'm really blessed here. I mean, 107 episodes.
Yeah, incredible. And I mean, none of us thought it would anything would happen to it after the first series. But we went on for, I think it was 8 or 9.
And people loved the character, though I think you particularly think that he wasn't that nice a man.
I think this was a misunderstanding. Some journalists say, why was that character such a success? And I actually think I said, well, I'm not sure, because he was a dreadful man, really. And if you actually wrote down how much money he lost each week, it was more than the lottery.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. And I've got to ask you this. The catchphrases, were they written for you? I mean, they've become legendary catchphrases. And I don't even need to tell people what they were. Your title of the book is one of them. But were they your idea or were they in the script?
Oh, no, they were in the script.
Right.
Leon, who created the series, created the character Erin Dawes. And they agreed that she should never be seen.
Mm-hmm.
And we asked him where that came from, and he said it was a taxi driver that he used to have who always said, I've got to get home now because I've got to get back for her indoors or she gets angry. And the taxi driver denied all knowledge of it.
Brilliant, brilliant. And I would have guessed that having such a pivotal role on such a massive TV show, 16.4 million viewers at the height, would mean that as you were going about your daily business, people would probably assume that you were the character.
Yes, and the only unfortunate time was when I was driving down the M4 at about 50 miles an hour and somebody came past, going probably about 60, put the window down and shouted out, hello, Arthur! I quickly reduced my speed to let him get on ahead.
Oh, superb. And why did it come to an end? Do you really know the truth why Waterman left?
No, I don't. I've never really found out why he left. Mm. But I've worked with him since on New Tricks.
Yes.
And we didn't discuss it.
Okay.
But, the reason it ended was because, thanks to the Prime Minister at the time, they lost the franchise.
Ah.
And nobody else wanted to pick it up, so that was that.
And, of course, they did remake it with Shane Ritchie.
Don't talk about that.
Well, I know, I don't know what went through somebody's head to think that you could remake such a classic and do nothing other than make it rubbish.
Exactly.
And they weren't disappointed.
Oh, yes, they were.
So now what's your life like, George? Tell us. I mean, you've done a bit of stuff, as you say, in New Tricks. You're still doing a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. And you've written this book and put it all down. The World Was My Lobster. It's a great read about, you know, what a career. Would you do anything differently, George, if you could do it all over again?
No.
I'm delighted to have spent some time talking to you, George, and I'm sure our listeners will be thrilled to hear it.
Thank you very much indeed.
George Cole, thank you ever so much. And nice to know that there's a Malaga connection to Cleopatra.
Yes.
Extraordinary. Thank you, George. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Situation. Right people, right time, just the wrong location. I've got a good idea. Just you keep me near, I'll be so good for you.
I could be so good for you.
Theme Reminder, sung by Dennis Waterman, I Could Be So Good For You, and that was our little tribute there to George Cole, who sadly passed away in the last couple of days. That was an interview recorded back in 2013.